From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Welcome to Defrag Tools. What are we going to talk about today?
We're continuing our look at the synchronization objects, events, semaphores, mutexes, and critical sections. Last week we did critical sections. This week is events.
Very nice. So, what do we have to do to get started here?
Let's have a demo program. They tend to be the best way of getting things done, huh? Where's my demo apps? If you hold down shift, when you press right click, you get an open command prompt. So kind of tip for the day. And so we'll get two command prompts going. This one's going to run the app. And I'm going to show two apps today. I wrote two apps to demonstrate the point. They're kind of close to each other. One's the application written wrong. One's the application written right. And it shows you the design pattern's probably the word for it, of how you should actually write your code to be fast and efficient and stuff like that. So I'm just going to let this run, and then you'll see the text on the screen. And then at some point, actually, I'll do it right now.
And we talked a little bit last week about the difference between auto reset events and non-auto reset events.
So maybe the simple explanation is an auto reset means that when you walk through the door, you slam the door behind you and nobody else can go through. A manual reset event means you open the door and the floodgates open. So I just grabbed two full dumps. So what this program does is roughly the same as what the last week one did. It makes an event object, the main thread, which, you know, the main booting thread, the main thread. And then it makes three threads to do some work. And then it waits a little while just so, you know, we get a nice screen, slow bang, bang, bang down the screen. And then it fires the event. In this case, what it fires is an auto reset event. So one person is released, and all the other waiters still don't have anything to do. In this case, the guy goes and makes a million files. We've talked about before how that makes 5 or 10 seconds of CPU thrash. And then in this case, the way it's coded is that thread exits. So you'll end up with only two worker threads left out of the three. And what we've got here is not really an issue, it's just a program that is dormant. And so what we're going to show you is how all these events can be found in the dump file and what you can correlate between the two. The main difference between events, semaphores, and mutexes, and a critical section is that those first three don't have owners, right? They're just something that, it's kind of like a boolean you just wait on. It's more efficient than a boolean. And so you can't work out ownership, you can't work out like a train of events backwards. So all you can do is make educated guesses about what can be achieved. So the first dump I made was while the temporary files were being created. And so we should have three dumps. Oh, sorry, we should have three worker threads still, and we should have the main thread. So tilde star K is the way to dump out all the threads. It's thinking. This is the main thread, and in today's one, I've changed the sleep that we had last week into a wait for multiple objects, and we'll go into that in more detail. Thread one's doing the file operation. This week, the event, we've captured the dump while it's in the open file call. Last week, we happened to catch it just as it was working out the file name. And then we've got two other threads, wait for single object and wait for single object. And so those three threads at the bottom were waiting on an event. The top one fired, got its thing, and then started to do work, and the bottom two are waiting still. So if we change to two and have a look at what he looks like, if we do a KV, what we're trying to do is work out what this thing is waiting on. So with a critical section, it has enter critical section. With events, semaphores, and mutexes, or not mutexes, but events and semaphores, you use this function called wait for single object. And that will let you wait on any waitable object. So there's actually more waitable objects, and you probably can go through them, but there's threads. You can also wait on a thread.
Sure.
A timer. What else is there?
Mutex.
Semaphores we did, events.
Semaphore.
There's a couple more you can wait on. And so it doesn't have to be a synchronization primitive. It can be a registry key. So if register key changes.
That's true.
Stuff like that. And so that function is able to wait on one of these things changing. And this is how things like when a file system folder changes, it gets notified and the thread wakes up and then does maybe a redraw of the screen and stuff.
A lot of times you'll, especially when people are kind of learning to debug, they'll kind of get thrown because they'll see all these threads or they'll see some thread, they think there's a problem and it's called into wait for single object or wait for multiple objects and they're like, oh, there's a bug in wait for single object or, you know, never have I seen a bug in wait for single object or wait for multiple object. There may be a bug in the logic, you know, before you called it, or you know some other thing like that, but these are just very commonly used NT functions that you know everybody calls. And
these are not the droids you're looking for.
Exactly. So
You'll
see them all the time at the top of stacks whenever threads are waiting for something.
But, and the last example I'll show today is Explorer Dump, and it's got like hundreds of threads. Every single one is on wait for single objects, and it's a good example of how. Explorer, there's nothing wrong with it when it's a dump file. It just was sitting there doing its thing, right? And it just happened to have like 60, 100 reasons to wait. And we'll go through what you can look at about those and understand what is like a something that looks like it's busy or not and what little clues you can pick up out of just the way that the thread of the stack looks.
It's just kind of how the way you know modern multi-threaded programming works is these... It's sort of event-driven. You have you have threads waiting to handle a certain type of work, and they wait for a signal that it's time to do that. So,
back in the day, people used to do little for loops, and that's what I'm going to show you in the second example of don't do a for loop because it's really bad for performance. There's two ways of looking at for loops, maybe polling. So you might go, have we quit yet? No. Okay, we'll wait for 10 more seconds. Have we quit yet? All right. And we keep on... going around, well, that means every 10 seconds you're getting scheduled, which means every 10 seconds you're destroying battery life.
Yeah.
There's no reason to use a loop to work out decisions. Events particularly, that's exactly what they're for.
Yeah.
It will use the absolute minimum amount of CPU power to achieve the goal. To the extent that it will actually wake, some of them will actually, if you're asleep, you can wake up the machine to resolve the wait.
It's kind of like, you could think of it like the old way would be like, are we there yet?
Yeah.
Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
I'll tell you when
we're
there.
Are we there yet? And this is, no, tell me when we're there.
And this is the much better road trip where the kid goes to sleep in the back seat, and when you get there, you go, wake up, we're there.
Awake. Exactly.
Everybody has a much better life.
Yes.
So what we're looking for, wait for single objects, wait for multiple objects, and all the other variants of that function, they work on handles. And what we're looking for is handle data. What's a handle? So,
Chad, what is a handle?
What's a handle? Well, so kernel, the kernel has this thing called the object manager, which is pretty much every kind of thing in the kernel is an object, and that's what you're calling when you call wait for single objects. But the kernel doesn't expose those objects to the to applications, or you know, typically you even drivers don't. Work directly against objects. So when you...
But why is that? I mean, why don't we expose it? Is it more of a safety thing?
I think it's more, we just want to take care of that for you and leave the difficult stuff to the OS.
Yeah.
And so whenever the kernel creates any object, whether it's a file object or a thread object or a event object or whatever, any of these objects we're talking about, it will give you a handle to it when you and then that is what you reference it by. And so there's sort of this, each process has a handle table associated with it. And these handles, after you do enough debugging, you kind of get used to seeing what they look like because they're typically pretty relatively small numbers because every process rather has its own handle table and it kind of starts numbering, well, not at zero, but at
Multiples of four.
They're always a multiple of four. So if you see some, you know, number in the parameters to a function and it's like a, you know, 8 or a C or a 5C or something like that, and you know, which is hex still divisible by 4, then you know, chances are it might be a handle. Yeah. And so, and when you call, for example, to... to work on a file that you've opened. You reference it by the handle that you were given when you opened that file.
So. Remember the good old, was it Visual Basic? No, it was base. What was that DOS one? The one that Bill Gates wrote. Was it MS Basic?
Well, he wrote GW Basic.
GW Basic. That's how you get Gatesillian Basic. That's right.
I always heard it was GWiz Basic.
Oh, really?
But apocryphal.
Yeah, we never wrote it. So
I just remember seeing it before games popped up.
So back then, when you opened a file, you got back a number. It just said, you have file number one. You have file number two. And it's kind of the same concept.
Yeah.
That you get this abstraction away from a real pointer that represents the real thing.
There's some good reason why they're divisible by four that I don't remember the reason for, but I think it's talked. I think Mark talks about it in Windows internals or something.
Maybe the pushing the limits limit log series. Yeah.
So I notice a lot of your demos that you write are 64-bit. Mm. Is there anything else that you need to know for 32-bit, or is it going to be pretty much the
it is a bit different.
Same principles?
Yeah, we do need to address that a little bit more than we are, probably, mainly because ARM is 32-bit currently, and some of these smaller tablets that you're getting, they're 32-bit Windows, not 64-bit Windows. The calling convention, it's called the calling convention, as in the way that functions call from A to B to C to D, that's what defines what data you're looking for. In the 64-bit calling convention, it uses registers first, and then it uses memory if it can't fit it. And the main reason is when you're inside the CPU, it's very cheap to change registers. If you have to pass it in memory, well, now you have to talk to the memory manager, talk to the level 1, 2, 3, 4 cache in your CPU. You have to lock the memory bus. You have to go talk to the RAM stick. You have to do a PFN transition. Blah, 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 blah.
There's a lot of optimizations like processor cache and stuff like that to help that go faster. But still, it's heavier than editing a register.
Yeah, which is like literally one cycle. So at 1-2 gigahertz, it is that, whatever it is, nanosecond or whatever that level it is. But with x86, there's not that many registers, and you run out of space, and so registers aren't used as much, and so you do push it onto the stack, and you do talk to the memory manager, and it's slower. So if you have exactly the same hardware, which if you happen to have a 64-bit CPU in your box, and you install the exactly same software, the 64-bit version versus the x86 version, the 64-bit version will run faster, right? Because it will use registers more. Well, there is overhead, yes.
Chaz is whining over here.
It's pretty close.
One of the major benefits, if it's memory intensive, the memory copies on 64-bit are actually 128-bit wide. So every time it copies, like, hello world to hello world, it copies it in 128-bit chunks. And on x86, it uses only 32 bits, I think. So it actually uses what's called the XMM extensions to x64, which is 128 bits wide, not 64 bits wide. So a copy in 64-bit is much faster. So, and then we can talk about memories. You've got more memory and stuff.
There's pros and cons. I mean, there's more. There's another level of page tables on 64-bit, so there's a little more overhead associated with that. So
it's balanced.
It's balanced, but
if I had 4 gig of RAM, I would have 64-bit version on, just because it will balance the memory out better. Your PCI devices will be pushed up out of this 4 gig range, stuff like that. Now, when you're down to 3 gig and 2 gig, it's becoming debatable. So
you'll see still, I would say 5 years ago, I would have said 32 bits going away. And then we kind of had this sort of shift in the market towards smaller, more portable devices that are, less memory, less power. And 32-bit just made more sense for those that kind of processor design and things like that. So a lot of the smaller Intel Atom machines are 32-bit only, and ARM, like you mentioned.
And the new Ivy Bridges that are coming out.
Yeah. So, there's still some life left in 32-bit.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, what we're looking for is something that ends with 048C. And looking on the stack, we actually happen to be lucky and see it right there.
Right there, 2C.
Because it's way for single objects, it's actually passed as a straight number. It's not passed as an array of numbers. So it happens to be right there. That's purely a fluke, really. It's an artifact of actually this function, which we called pushing it onto the stack so it could call this function. And so if you look at the registers, that last function actually was passed the value actually as a register, and it was actually passed, by the looks of it, in RDI. So that's the handle that we are waiting on. And then, so there's a command we're going to learn today, which is only one command, which is bang handle. So there's bank handle, and when you just run it, it will spit out a summary at the end of how many different types of things are in this process. So we have event handles and file handles and directory handles. A directory handle is not actually a file handle. It's actually a directory object, which is a screen workstation concept. A key, which is a registry key, a thread, and an ALPC port. What's an ALPC?
Asynchronous local processor. Oh, no, I can't think. Local LPC is local processor call, I think, or something like that. So it's a mechanism for processes to communicate between each other.
Cool. So, yeah, what you get is a dump of all of the things and all the numbers. So there's a lot of file ones. And now 2C? Yeah, 2C. There it is. It's an event. What you can do, if you're not quite sure what data the dump file has in it, procdump, I know, has always saves handle data, no matter what type of dump you take, but some other programs won't, like maybe Task Manager and stuff like that. If you're not sure, there's a command, I wasn't going to show this, but I'm going to anyway, called dump debug. So it actually will dump out the description of what the dump file has in it. And so right at the top, when you do it, there is a flag called handle data. It's been supported since Debugger Engine 5.1, which is the Windows XP one. So every OS should have this. If you have this handle data in it, you get to use a different flag. And so currently what we did is we said, show us handle 2C, which is our event. It doesn't really give you much information, right? Much like a lot of the other programs, there's a bit mask, and you can use the help. And we're in the user mode side of things, and then we can give it all these flags. And it defaults to 1, but we can turn these other bits on. And so if you add 8, 4, 2, and 1 together, you get F. And so if we put an F on the end here, you'll get more information. You'll find out what the access is. So we are told about these things when it happens. And we are told that currently two handles within our process, there's two copies of the handle in the process. So if I do close handle on the one I've got, there's still one other one hanging around.
One thing about that pointer count, that's kind of something that I've noticed different in Windows 8.
Yes.
That's always a real big number like that.
So do you know why?
I believe you told me once and I've already forgotten.
Yeah, Ken Johnston, who's the person who writes LiveKD, enlightened everybody inside Microsoft eventually. So what happened was we realized that, we talked about this a little bit last week or weeks before about lock contention and how things just don't scale if there's one event or something, some synchronization object that everybody's trying to use. Well, one of those ones was the object manager lock in the kernel. And so every time you make a handle and take a reference out to it, well, you need to take a lock out to increment this the pointer count. So the handle count is how many people hold a pointer to it in user mode. Pointer count is how many people point to it in the kernel, right? The pointer count usually is higher than the handle count because device drivers and stuff have an additional hold of things. The reason why it's big is they realize that there's contention. And so what they now do is they take out whatever that number is. I'm guessing that's
512K.
Is it 512K?
Plus or minus a little, I think.
Yeah, it's a weird number. Actually, I know. I didn't put
it in. You need to zero in.
Yeah, so it looks like there's
512K plus 1. Or
yeah,
something.
That's a weird number. But what they do is they actually take out 512,000 pointers to it, and then they make it the responsibility of the object itself to handle locking. So there's always enough space to take a handle out so you don't need a lock, and then then there's a locking mechanism within itself that's granular only at the per object level rather than the whole object manager, which means there's no more contention on the on these things when they're being acquired. Instantaneous performance increase in Windows. So in Windows 7 and below, that will be a real number. That will be like 5.
Yeah, it would be the number of handle count plus however many additional kernel handles are.
I know Mark is looking at trying to get back to the real number. I don't know what his progress is with that, but hopefully one day Process Explorer or something will be updated to do that.
By the way, I remembered it's asynchronous local procedure call, ALPC. Sorry. Okay. Took me a minute.
So the other program that we can use in this space is a program called WinObj, which is WinObject, which is part of SysInternals. I don't think we've shown this one yet. In this case, based on what we're going to do, is we're going to need to run it as administrator. It just happens to be that what the key that we're going to look up. So here's the debug. So this is the name of the event. So most events don't have names. If the programmer wants to be more clear in what they're coding or allow the event to be fired by another process, and I'll give you an example of that in a sec, you can name the event. We are running in a session. The entity services and all that stuff run in session zero. The first person who logs in is in session one. Also, at the console, the person at the physical machine is on session one. If you're on like an RDP session, you'll get a nice high number. There's an area called base name objects and then the name. So I actually passed in the code work event. And so in WinObj, you can see that. So what you can do is we can go to sessions, one, base name objects, and then there it is, work event. So this program's still hung in the background, so it's still allocated. And there's the event that I allocated. And I can click on it, actually, and actually work out whether it's signaled or not. And I actually don't know any other way, except for using WinObj to actually work that out, whether it's signaled or not. There's an interesting one in here. If you ever, you know how when you log into Windows, you get, the welcome screen. After you log in, it says, preparing your desktop or that type of thing.
Yeah, for the first time.
Yeah. The working one. One where it just sits there for blue finally Explorer happens.
Right.
Well, that's actually because of this thing right here. There is an event called the Shell Ready event. And so Explorer is made straight away. And you go, well, as soon as Explorer is made, why don't we have a desktop? Well, what it does is it goes in rounds and loads up all the icons and what your desktop looks like in your wallpaper. And when it's finally painted the screen and it's ready to look okay, rather than you see icons slowly build up, it fires the Shell Ready event. And what that does is it tells Win Logon, I'm ready to be displayed, and then WinLogon will switch the desktop, the workstation from the desktop workstation, one of those two, from the login desktop to the real one. And so roughly it goes from, when you press Control or Del and the screen comes up, well, that actually changes to a different desktop. And same with USC, when it comes up and it goes all black, and that's a different desktop. It's a completely different way that the mouse and the keyboard are interacting with Windows. And, this event fires that. And as you can see at the moment, it is signaled because I logged in and you did that.
Yeah, I believe that was something we did in Vista to give you that nicer experience with the slow, the fade out from the login screen, the fade into the desktop, where before that, like XP, you used to see all the desktop icons kind of paint one by one.
And this desktop switch event, I think, is new. This one definitely, the visible event, is new to Windows 8. I think that will fire interchangeably when you go between the start menu and not.
I
think at the moment that'll be true because I'm on the desktop. So if you were kind of wondering how these things are used generically, that's how. So if you want to see events and they happen to have a name, you can go into WinObj and see if it's signal or not, which is kind of useful. There's no real way of seeing which process it comes from. You have to get a dump file to correlate the name. You can also use Process Explorer to see handles and stuff as well. All right, so now we have this information. We know that this thing is, we have this right to see that its state is modified. So when we're allowed to see that the event's fired, and then this happens to be its name. And at the moment, a couple of people are waiting on it. So that's just general knowledge that we're waiting on an event, and this is the event that that does that. If we look across all the stacks, this one's interesting. There's a redraw bug. I think it's a redraw bug in Windows 8. Anyway, so this one's doing a wait for multiple objects, right, instead. And so let's have a look at that guy and see why he's doing multiple objects rather than a single object. So before we were able to find it on the stack and find it on registers, it passes just the number. In the case of a wait for multiple objects, it passes an array of handles, not just the handle pure. And so let's have a look at what the stack looks like, KV. So this thing is waiting on something, and somewhere in here is our data, and this is where you have to kind of go sleuthing. So I can kind of guess that this may be the pointer, and I'll just do a quick try at it. So I'm just going to DP is dump pointers, and it doesn't have good numbers, right?
Those don't look like handle numbers.
No, because they're not divisible by 4, and they're not a low number. So what we're going to do is go back to registers, which is usually where you'll find this stuff. And one of these we're hoping will be decent. So we'll do RAX, because it looks like a semi-decent number for a pointer. 18, but that one's got a bad one there. So if we're waiting on one object, that could be it. So let's have a quick look at that. Bang handle 18, see what it is. It's waiting on a file. Yeah, I kind of doubt that the that something's waiting on a file on the first one. So let's try this one instead. And this is where you kind of have to go, you know, be a bit programmerish and understand why would someone be waiting on a file in a main thread? It doesn't really make sense. Right? You're going to be waiting for, you know, things to terminate and stuff, not that a file exists.
Right.
So that wasn't a good number. Let's try. So the calling convention uses ABC a lot, and it uses
8-9
a lot. And this one's probably more the.
That looks.
No.
No.
So it may be. So because we're frames of move, so we called into something, but then it calls something else, and so it might have moved stuff around. And so it may have read it and pushed it somewhere. Mm-hmm. Whoops. And there we have. Yeah,
that
we
looks
finally
like
got
handles.
It. So what we have is 34, 38, and 3C. In fact, they're in order also, guys. Oh, yeah.
Consecutive.
You know, it looks like someone allocated these bang, 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 and then waited on it as a group. So it kind of gives it away. Not that common. You'd be more like, you know, a couple of hundred apart. So let's do a bang handle on the first one, and it's actually a thread. So you know how I said you don't have to wait on synchronization of object? You actually can wait on thread objects. So the fact that there is 3 in a row, thread, 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 well, we made 3 threads, right? And this is where the extra handle data happens to really help. If we put an F on it, it will say, this is a handle to a thread. We have all these things. And we have the right to terminate it and to suspend it and all these other things. There's 3 handle counts out to it at the moment, but it actually tells us what the thread is. All right? And so that 370 on the end is the magic.
So do you want to talk about what does that mean to wait on a thread object?
Yeah. So without banging out the other three, we're going to get 370, CC0, and 85C as the three we're going to find, right? Mm-hmm. By waiting on all three, the question is, are we waiting on one to do something, or are we waiting on all three? So, well, what's the do something, which is what you just said. The do something is the thread to end. And so it makes sense for the main thread to be waiting for all the worker threads to finish. When they've cleanly shut down, then it's time to end the program, and don't do it before that, because you want to make sure that everything's clean and succinct. This program, if you look back at the output, what I did was it made an event, it actually physically allocated that worker event we saw in Winoba J. It made 3 workers. The 3 workers are waiting for something to do. It fired the event once. One person did that and then started working. And then we're still waiting for the other 2 guys to end. So if I had fired the event 2 more times in the main thread, all 3 of them would have been happy. All 3 of them would have got to their thread exit code. Now, a worker thread usually doesn't do that. It usually goes back around the loop. And that's what the next program I'm going to show you is. But in this case, it's waiting for a thread to exit. So when you're looking at these dumps, don't just get locked into the idea that it's events and stuff like that. It can also be threads, registry keys, files, lots of other things. And so in this case, we're waiting on 370. And as I said, I caught this dump when it was mid taking doing the file activity. If we look at the second dump, same thing, we are down to 3 threads, and one of the objects we are waiting for doesn't even come up on the list anymore. That first number is gone. And so you can go, well, it's pretty clear that we're waiting for threads to terminate. If you see that one's missing, then it's a good indicator that that's the design pattern they've used. So this program, what it's doing is saying, hey, fire an event on these worker threads. When you've done work once, die. And then when the main thread sees that all threads, 3 threads have died, finish the program. And I could, you know, live attach to those to this now and kill those threads of the debugger, and then it would actually clear itself up and leave. So if you had a mission critical server that you must go down safe, you could screw around with it a bit, I guess. All right, so that design pattern's not the best. It's obviously a worker who's not does their work once. It just doesn't really make sense. So let's have a look at the second program I wrote. That's not the one I want. What's it called? What do I call it? M to me. Yeah. So this is roughly the same idea, but it actually represents reality. So it made two events. It made a quit event and a work event. And if we jump across to WinOBJ, press F5 for refresh, we'll see that we now have a quit event that's not fired, and a work event that will fire very instantaneously. It'll fire, someone will pick it up, and then
be reset.
Do it. But this, in this case, what happened is the...
It's when OBJ dynamic, is that... no, did you see that?
You need to press F5.
Yeah.
So it's a point in time. So I made a quit event that's manual, right? And manual means that once you open the door, nobody's ever going to close it until someone calls the function reset event, which in this case you don't really want to do. And then there's another one, which is the work event. And so what this guy did is he made three threads, and then he set the event. One of the guys, so this happens to be the first thread, did some work. He made a temporary file. I reduced it to 100,000 times, so it takes like a couple of seconds. And then he went back into waiting. So he's all three guys were doing work, waiting, and they're actually waiting on two objects this time, not one. They're waiting on the quit event and the work event, right? And what that means is they will sit there and do absolutely nothing while the program doesn't need to do work and doesn't need to quit, right? The other way of doing it is you could have put a timeout on the wait and waited for 10 seconds, for example, and then go, is quit equal to true? Okay, now we're going to quit out. But the problem is you're waking up every thread every 10 seconds, and if you have 1,000 threads, that basically means you're nonstop waking up on average, and you're just killing battery life for no good reason, just to go, are you done? It's the, are we there yet?
Are we there yet?
Are we there yet? It's just a little bit slower. And so the
just as annoying, though.
Yeah, so the better way of doing it is to have, right, when I need you to do work, I'm going to wake you up, and you do work, and then you go, okay, I'm about to sleep again, and then we'll go, okay, we're home now, I'll wake you up. And it's completely, and it's great for battery life, stuff like that. So let's take a dump halfway through this guy. As you can see, it ran three, then I waited 30 seconds in the main thread, I fired the quit event, then I waited for all of the threads to get the quit event, which, so you can see quit event fired, then the thread exits because it sees the quit event, and then I've noticed, because I was waiting on all the threads to end, that that it's finished. In this case, I'm not going to get a very good dump file because it's fast, so what I'm going to do is show the source code and finish it off that way. So let's start this guy again. We're going to get a dump file. So we've done our work, and all of them are waiting for, they're all waiting on events, and the main thread is waiting for 30 seconds before it's going to quit. And so what we're going to see is we're going to see the main thread on asleep, and we're going to see all the other ones on wait for multiple objects, not a wait for single object anymore. And actually, we can start looking at the dump before it ends. And so, as I said, you'll see that there's a sleep because we're waiting 30 seconds before we're about to fire the quit event, and then all these guys are going to realize that. And so let's have a look at what these wait for multiple objects looks like. Before, we had an array of thread handles, thread handles on the main one. Now we're going to be looking for an array of events. They can be mixed. You can wait for an event and a handle of a thread or a key all at the same time. Anything that's a waitable object can be in that array. So let's just choose thread one for the sake of it. KV, much like before, that array of pointers is in here somewhere. Registers are a much safer way. Because we happened to hit it on this one before, the odds are we're going to be good again.
Maybe that looks like a...
That's good.
Yeah, okay.
So we are waiting on a handle 2C, which is an event, and we are waiting on a handle 3, 4, which is an event, right? If we explode them out a bit, 34 is the work event, and 2C is the quit event. And it's just because I've named them. Naming is quite rare. If you get it, it's great. If you don't, so be it. So you can just say that these guys are waiting on multiple events, which is a very common design pattern. You wait for work and you wait for the quit event. So I'll show you the code.
So tell me when there's work for me to do or when we're quitting.
Yeah. And so this is what it looks like. You have a loop that says, keep on going around while we're not quitting, so while we've got work to do. And then let's kill that. And so here's the wait for multiple objects, and we are doing it on an array of events, and there happens to be two, right? And then in this case, what's false in that one? False is... I'm not sure what it is.
Anyway, have to look it up. It's infinite wait. Is it whether it's signaled or only one?
Yeah.
Right?
So this one is, only one. So you're looking for a zero. So you could look at the registers and stuff like that and find out whether it's a one or a zero. If it's a one, it means that all of them have to be satisfied. And if we look down at the multi-thread one, where we're waiting for all of the threads to finish, it's a true.
Right.
Because we're waiting for all three threads to finish off.
So we will only return from that call when all of those events are, or yep. all of those handles
have fired.
Have all of those objects have been signaled.
Been signaled, that's the word for it. And then infinite is a hash defined for minus one, which because everything is unsigned, it's FFFFFFF, it's like eight Fs.
Which is how long we're a timeout you set, right?
Yeah. So if you do infinite, it will never come back. And so if we look at the, should I put this on top? If we look at the registers, it's not there, so maybe on the stack, you'll probably see there lots of Fs, right? So instead of seeing zero, or a number, sorry. So you can wait for 0 seconds and it goes, if nothing's done, fine, it's an instant timeout. You can give it a number in milliseconds, like 10,000 is 10 seconds. Or you can go this FFFFF, which means never come back. And so the code is, looking at this quick code, it's a loop. If the wait object 0 fired, which is the first one in the array, then it's the quit one. I set the boolean to true. When we go around the loop, we fall out and then the thread exits. If it's the second wait object, then I go and do a whole lot of work, and then we should never get a timeout when we pass infinite, but I log it out anyway.
Well, this is a very common kind of design
very
for
common.
Worker threads. You see this sort of code all the time.
Yeah. And then as far as the main thread who did the work, here's the create events. One of them made it as a manual reset event, one of them made it as an automatic reset event. Here's the name that was optional on the end. They went into two positions in a global array of handles. Here's me making a local array of handles for the threads when I did the create thread. Now I'm showing this all in C because it's much cleaner. .NET and all those are exactly the same. I just don't see that. It's just not as easy to clearly describe what's going on. But underneath the surface, .NET and all those programs all come down to C. The .NET is written in C. It's not written in the CLR or in a .NET language. It's written in C, and fundamentally, when you say create thread in a C# program, you are actually eventually going to call the Win32 create thread. Or if it's a Metro app, they don't exist anymore, do they? A Windows Store app, you will see the WinRT equivalent of that. It's just lots of code. So the last thing I was going to show you is what Explorer looks like. And this is much more real world, right? And I'm going to use Unique Stack to pull out, I'll do all of them first, and then I'll show you why you want to use Unique Stack. So when you punch out all the stacks, you'll see a lot of these ones that are very short and narrow. So there's one there, one there, one there. What we can do is we can get rid of the repetitiveness of it and just show the unique signatures. So all of these threads have been culled.
Filtered out.
And what you'll see is a lot of these wait objects. Now, wait for user wait message is kind of like wait for multiple objects and wait for single objects. It just happens to come from the message queue rather than an event object. But there, here's your wait for multiple objects, right? And here's another wait for valid messages, another thing that's kind of like wait for multiple objects. Aphemeral objects. And once you start looking at programs, you will see this a lot. And there's one in here that actually I'm going to point out because it's kind of interesting. There's a... I found this one last night. I thought this is an interesting stack. There's a DLL called VAN.
View Available Networks.
Oh, very good.
I had to debug it recently. That's why I know.
So this is the thing that does all this Trayocon stuff, right? I'm guessing.
That has to do with when you bring up the networks.
Oh, this one?
It's
one?
Actually the modern one. No, oh, so like if you go over to your charms bar.
Yeah.
And like you bring up networks there.
Oh, I know what you mean. And, yeah. This one.
That one. Yeah.
I'm not going
to
open it.
It has to do with that. Yeah.
So this one's kind of interesting because it's on thread 59. So we're going to change to 59. And here's VAN on the stack, which is why I found it. And there's a waveform objects. So we'll do a register. And I think we're going to follow the consistency and assume that's in 13. And there's some higher numbers. Once you get into bigger programs, you know, the thousands are common, and I'll do like a band handle, and you'll see that this guy has lots and lots of handles of all the different types. You actually can see the types in WinOBJ. If you go under... where is it? Oh, object types. There's all the different object types that Windows has. And so we're using event at the moment a lot. But there's lots of different events that, lots of different object types that are out there. And so, you know, this thing's up to 2,000-ish, so seeing a 1,000 range is not unexpected. So when you're looking for handles and trying to find that array, do a bang handle first, work out what the maximum number is, then you have an idea of what your range is, and then dig into it. So in this case, I see 1E2C, 1D00, and 17BC. Then it goes into zeros. It isn't a null terminated array, but to me, it makes me think that's probably the end. If I did some sleuthing, I may find I do a 3 on the register, so 3 is valid. So let's just do a dump out of what these guys are. So we've got bang handle 1E2C. Oops. And that one is an event. It has no name, so that's all we know about it. The next one is 1D100. And once again, that's an event and no name to it. But if it was one of those ones that like the show ready event, then you would get the name, right? And then the last one, which is the one that I found interesting, and the reason why you really want to use this F flag is...
Is that it? BC. You typed it wrong.
Oh, did I? Thank God, because this is a good... Oh.
I thought 17BC.
Maybe I might be on the wrong thread. I'll show it a different way. One of the things it was waiting on is a key. And so you actually can see the register key it's waiting on. Right? And so in this case, I must have done something wrong, but the VAN was watching an NT service key, blah, 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 slash VAN. And so obviously if anybody changes the configuration, say by pushing out group policy or something, it would detect that group policy change. This thread would wake up. It would say the event 3, say it was the third one on the list, fired. You would know that's because the registry key changed, and then you could do a reconfiguration. So
it's waiting for changes, notification of any kind of changes to the network availability.
But in this case, it was waiting on maybe a policy observation of that.
Right.
So you might say, disable the VAN ability, and so it would dynamically turn itself on or off.
Right.
And that's what all that the handle data comes down to. So when I remember how I said, dot dump debug, you actually can see, let's print them all out, here's all the raw data. So you can, if you just do a dump debug, you can see all of them really fast. And as I said, it all comes down to because this flag was set when the dump file was taken.
And so those are all registry keys that someone's interested in knowing about changes to.
So where's the handle table gone?
Someone in this process, even. Somebody in Explorer.
Yeah, someone in Explorer is interested in all of these things. So someone's interested in a section object, someone's waiting for a wait completion packet, someone's waiting for a timer. you know, it just goes on and on and on. So you can kind of get a really good idea of how a system's being used. And what you see here is very close to what you see in Presto's Explorer. So if I choose Explorer, where is it? And then bring up the lower pane view, which is Windows L. Windows D shows all the DLLs, Control D and shows DLLs, Control H shows handles. So you can see the same thing live with Presto's Explorer. And so, for example, that registry key we saw, which I was looking for, which hopefully is still going to be here, is actually, I should have H key, local machine. Anyway, you can see what is being used. There's hundreds there. Mm-hmm. Current control set, yeah, wherever it is. So that's it for events. A bit of a foray into handles as well. We have one more episode in the user space, which is semaphores and mutexes. We'll do a bit more theory about them as well, particularly with mutexes and the kernel. And then we'll delve into the kernel itself and how you can look at the kernel the same way that we've done in user mode and look at all the stacks and then find out who's waiting on who and stuff like that. And and move on.
Excellent. Well, you can now go put $20 in the Metro jar, and we're good. All right, so that's the show for this week. If you want to write us, you can email us at defragtools@microsoft.com, or you can leave a message in the show post forum, and we'll get back to you there. See you next week.
Have a good week. Bye.